1027 Business with Michael Avery.
Import-export business Hume International is warning that local food companies are fighting a war on multiple fronts as we see the impact of crumbling infrastructure, load shedding and soaring input costs all weighing on food prices and threatening food safety. It's based down in Port Elizabeth, Abeja, I should say. Hume International is a local leader in the importation and distribution of frozen foods and other food products. It imports over 180 million kilos of food from five continents. That was last year's figure. And I'm joined now by founder and MD Fred Hume. Fred, great to have you on the show. Do you recall a period as challenging as this in your, almost 25-year career?
Definitely not. We sailed through COVID, to be honest, and that was already the most uncertain period we'd ever faced in the history of this business. And then hit a wall, basically fell off a cliff the first of March. Really, that's when things became absolutely unplayable. And I think largely as a result of this war in the Ukraine.
What is that having on supply chain issues? We see the war in Ukraine obviously filtering through into the cost of energy prices. But Ukraine is one of the biggest wheat exporters in the world as well. So we see big impacts in food supply chain. What are the major impacts that you're seeing through your supply chain?
Well, we never really fully appreciated how important Ukraine was in the global global food supply chain. Certainly, they are massive exporters of wheat, but also the biggest exporter of sunflower oil and sunflower seed derivatives. So certainly this has permeated the value chain. And also the fact that thousands of containers on board container ships were destined for Odessa and other ports in the Ukraine. And suddenly these, you know, had to be turned around and containers dumped in transshipment ports. And that really just absolutely muddied the already very, very dirty water.
Yeah, and I mean, supply chain management within the food industry is already a highly complex, intricate process. Now you add something like that into the equation, and to your earlier point, it becomes almost unplayable. In terms of local factors, we talk a lot on the show about the failure of our state-owned enterprises that manage key infrastructure and just how important it is that we turn them around. Transnet is one of those. What impact is Transnet's decline having on your ability to get product in and out the country?
That's probably the most significant challenge, the most significant local challenge we as food importers face. The port infrastructure has been steadily declining over the years, and the floods in Durban as well as the riots certainly compounded that issue. But apart from that, all three major ports in South Africa handling container volumes have steadily dropped down the index of, let's call it efficiency. If there's an index that measures global port efficiency, and South Africa's three container terminals are routinely featured in the bottom 10 of 300 odd ports worldwide.
Wow. And that they measure it by TEU and how many, 40-foot containers you can move per hour. And it has just been steadily going backwards at a rate of knots. It's why when we heard about this, this decision to, on the one side, at least allow the private sector access to the general freight rail line, we welcome that. But then on the other side, there has been talk of bringing in the private sector to help with our port efficiency as well. And if we manage to get more onto rail, I think that will help somewhat with our port efficiency, because of what I hear is there's a big logjam at the ports because they were never really designed for the volume of truck cargo that we see now flowing through our ports.
That's definitely a good point. Certainly, if we could get some of this cargo off the roads and onto rail, it should reduce costs. Certainly, it would avoid congestion at these key points, and also I suppose preserve the roads and result in a better road safety record too. But we've seen the effect of privatization on ports in Africa. The one I want to speak about specifically is Beira in Mozambique. We ship a lot of cargo to this port.
Yeah.
And it's been run privately by Cornelda for many years. And certainly, I can't begin to tell you how much easier it is dealing with a port in the middle of nowhere, in a much poorer country than SA than it is with our local ports.
That is particularly frightening and actually, just beyond comprehension, to be honest with you. How we've allowed to let it slip this far really beggars belief. So what are transporters doing if they're forced to deal with these delays at ports? Are they just using cold storage facilities for longer? How are they responding?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, what happens is these trucks spend more time in a queue waiting to collect cargo from port. This obvious bottleneck then results in taking longer for the next vessel to discharge. We are then forced to often move these containers to plug-in depots prior to taking them to commercial cold stores, where we have to unpack them. Again, we're reliant on the Department of Agriculture to have the product inspected. This, in essence, is taking a lot longer than it previously did as well due to lack of staffing and government's, shall I say, well, I wouldn't call it the inability to appoint assignees, but I suppose their reluctance to appoint assignee private sector inspectors to inspect cargo, something we've been fighting about for a long time. They've handed us this concession from time to time. They did during the looting in Durban when we were able to divert some cargo to Port Elizabeth. And we were able to use, let's call it accredited assignees to inspect our cargo. This certainly aided the movement and the efficiency. But this concession was ultimately withdrawn immediately after the looting period. We still feel that Durban particularly is underserviced in respect of operating commercial cold stores when there's a lot of availability in ports like Port Elizabeth currently, where we're sitting on open empty space, yet the vets refuse to consider Port Elizabeth or Gqeberha as anything but a secondary port. You know, regardless of the fact that the president went public stating that this was considered to be a very key infrastructure growth node, to alleviate poverty and unemployment and the rest of it.
Now, any idea as to why Port Elizabeth is not being considered, considering what you've just said about its ability to at least pick up some of that slack that's being experienced in Durban?
Yeah, Michael, we've been asking this question, of the department for many, many years. We keep on being referred to, unfortunately, nothing is gazetted or legislated as such, but, we've been met with lack of capacity sort of arguments or counter arguments. And, we've then obviously dispelled these by suggesting that assignees be used, assignees that were trained by the Department of Agriculture in Port Elizabeth, which were utilized during this looting period. And, which were considered to be more than adequate. But unfortunately, as I say, we just have not been able to make this a permanent concession, and therefore we're not able to expand our cold store operation in Port Elizabeth. We're stuck with longer delays in Durban. If it costs anything from 5,000 to 6,000 rand to keep a container around for a day or two longer than it should be necessary, and you can imagine this just adds to the cost.
To the costs, as we see inflation rising, and the poorest of the poor tend to bear the brunt of these cost increases. And again, it sounds to me like it's through this lens of ideology that the government just can't bring itself to work more closely with the private sector. And then obviously beyond transportation, you've got to manage your cold chain through load shedding. I mean, how do you do that? Are you just building out your own power solutions and going renewable? But how are you handling the load shedding issue?
Yeah, so at each of the sites we have solar, so that certainly contributes somewhat or alleviates the burden to a degree, producing about 30% of our power requirement. But for the rest of it, we have to burn diesel, using diesel generators. So, again, compounding the cost, adding to the price on shelf. One of these constraints does that.
Yeah, death by a million cuts springs to mind here for our food importers and exporters. That was founder and MD of Hume International, Fred Hume, with the cold truth about our food crisis here on Hot Business.
Hot 102.7 Business with Michael Avery.